Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Welcome, everyone. This is the Haftorah for Parshas Pekudei. What's interesting, this is really the last of really four different parshas that deal with the construction of the tabernacle, the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan. And it's really stressed a lot. And the important thing is that we have to have Hashem in our lives. We have to be worthy that Hashem's, we should reflect Hashem. It should be part of our living is you know, to think about Hashem, and that we should be worthy that Hashem's presence be felt where we frequent ourselves, where we are. And that's really what the Beis HaMikdash was about. And again, there are similar themes to previous parshas that talk about the... and each thing that they had in the Beis HaMikdash was symbolic of something. Shortly, we're going to talk about the cherubs a little bit, which is a little bit more mystical. Whenever you talk about mystical things, it gets to be a little rough because you have to kind of see the context. But let's begin. It begins here. V'tishlam... it begins here with a little bit of a mystery. Well, I'll ask our wise audience to help us figure this out. So King Solomon, the tabernacles in the desert were temporary. We were traveling with those. Those were like little temporary places for the ark. And when we came to the land of Israel, Shlomo HaMelech finally built the Beis HaMikdash, the center place. And it says like this, V'tishlam ko melacha asher asa HaMelech Shlomo. And it finally finished. This was a big building job. Everybody knows when you do a big building, there's a lot of work involved. And especially in those days where you didn't have big machinery. You know, imagine without tractors and trucks and bulldozers, where everything had to be done by hand. Imagine getting the materials. And Yerushalayim, if you've been there, it's a mountainous area. Imagine traveling up mountains with big stones, you know, that take dozens of people to move. And again, if you didn't have a truck, you'd have to roll the stones. Well, it was just incredible how they, I mean, you had animals of burden, but still, how did you move? I mean, this was really a big job. It took, you know, tens of thousands of workers and material, and it was quite an accomplishment. Shlomo HaMelech was considered the wisest of all men. In order to build the base, there were certain challenges. One thing was that the Beis HaMikdash was known as a place of peace. The Beis HaMikdash, in fact, one of the main kind of offering is called Shlamim, which is peace, Shalom. Shlomo HaMelech, the one that built the Beis HaMikdash, his name was Shlomo, which means peace. And one of the things about the Beis HaMikdash was that they weren't allowed to use iron in the Beis HaMikdash itself, anything that could be used as a weapon. Because the Beis HaMikdash was built to be a place of peace, not a place of fighting. And so they didn't allow iron and heavy metals in the construction. So to take apart stones, how do you do that if you don't have, you know, big chisels and saws? And so the Shlomo HaMelech prayed to Hashem, and he went on a search of ways to cut stones. And he found out that there was an exotic creature called the shamir, that if you place it on the stone, it eats away and it'll cut the stones, even big stones. And it appears to be some kind of worm, but we don't have a worm today that could do such a thing. Although I've seen a scientific work that said that there is an ancient kind of worm that apparently, there's certain that knows helps cut stones. But he traced down these creatures and different things that were available to him. And after many years and much work, he completed the Beis HaMikdash, as Beis Hashem. Now, again, it's called the House of God. That's basically what Beis Hashem. V'yaveh Shlomo es kodshei David avi. Now here's the mystery. So David's dream was, it was his idea. Shlomo's father, David, wanted to build a Beis HaMikdash. David HaMelech was the first Jewish king, and before he thought of his own house, he thought of building a place for Hashem. And he was so excited about it, but Hashem told him that it wouldn't be built by him, it would be built by his son. So it says that David went on a fundraising campaign, and he put away all of the materials and all of the money needed for the construction of the temple. And that itself is an important rule. Sometimes you can't complete a mitzvah. Like sometimes we can, none of us can do it all alone, but you do whatever you can do. They had special cities that there was a mitzvah to set aside for refugees, that people that had killed by mistake and were afraid for their lives could run to. And even though that would only apply many years later, Moshe Rabbeinu set aside those cities while he was alive. Why? Because you do what you can do. That's always our rule. It's not our job to do all of it. We do whatever we're able to do. So David was told he couldn't do it, so he said, all right, let me collect all the money for it. And so David HaMelech went on the... he had different wars, and he had different campaigns, and he raised all the money for the temple. Even though he couldn't build it, he wanted to be as much a part of it as he could be. So he did all of that. So now what happens? His son Shlomo takes over the reign and is charged with building the Beis HaMikdash. And he builds the Beis HaMikdash, and he does not use anything that his father set aside. He raises all his own money. And he takes all of his father's stuff. We read that over here. And this is how the Haftorah begins, which is also interesting. Like, this is a funny place to begin. The Gentiles that broke up the chapters actually have this as the last chapter. But this is the beginning of the Haftorah. The Yavah Shlomo as Kache David Avias Akesev, the gold, the silver. This is not easy. Gold is hard to come by. I mean, imagine if you had all the funds for your building campaign. You said, nah, let's not use that. I'm going to start ours from scratch, right? So he's in it from scratch. That's the Kayim Nassim Bar says, he put them in the treasury, he put them in the bank, but he didn't use them. Why is that? Why wouldn't he? Doesn't seem right. Like that. Here his father put all this money aside and said, son, one day you'll be in charge and you've got all the money set aside for you. Anybody have any idea why he didn't use it?
Maybe he wanted the people to bring, just like they did for the first sanctuary, you know, all the...
That's a good...
Not wise-hearted.
Okay.
Whose heart was inspired, they brought things.
That's a beautiful... I hadn't thought about that, but I like that idea. You find that in other places, that certain things, in order that it be everybody's Beis HaMikdash, everybody would have a part in it, rather than just, you know, some money that they got from... That's an interesting idea. One idea I saw was that it says that in the time of David HaMelech there was a famine, if you remember. And in fact, that's the origin of the Tachlin prayer, where we beseech Hashem and we put our head down. The one that was at the time of the famine, where David basically, the famine is the worst thing, you know, when people die of hunger. It's really it's heart-rending to see people that you know, have to, you know, that would actually pass away because there was no food. So David had all this money set aside for the temple, and then the famine struck. So Shlomo felt that even though the money belonged to God, you have to spend the money so the people don't starve. And David hadn't touched it. So he felt that we can't build Hashem's house. Now, it's really complicated, because once you dedicate something to the temple, you know, you have to deconsecrate it, and they should have talked to the Sanhedrin, and, you know, I don't know how direct the criticism was, but he felt that it wasn't appropriate to use this money in the Beis HaMikdash if people had died because of a famine while there was gold and silver in the temple. A very interesting idea. That's like a criticism. It's almost like biting, but it's a... and that's a lesson also. Like, you know, money's important, but, you know, it's nothing like human lives. You know, you can sell the Sefer Torah to keep people alive, you know, to save lives, to redeem captives if people are life and death. There's another view that he felt when Hashem told David that you can't build it, that he also meant that we shouldn't use if it was the things that David, the Mashiach is going to come from David, and that's going to be the permanent Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo knew that this was going to be temporary, and he didn't want to, he knew what David had set aside was, it wasn't the time yet for it. He was told that. We can only guess, because it doesn't say why, but it's just interesting here in the verse that he didn't use his father's wealth that was set aside, and he put it in the treasury.
What caused the famine? Doesn't that usually represent something?
Yes, there's a whole discussion about that. It's a little complicated. There's one other idea as well that they bring down, that a lot of the money David had won in war with the pagans. Mm-hmm. And he was afraid that the pagans would want to come and say, well, like, this all belongs to us, you know, like the Arabs say today, you know, this is ours, it came from our wealth. And so therefore he wanted that no one would ever have a claim against the Beis HaMikdash, that it was Gentile money or that it belonged to the other nations and it had been stolen in war and that had, you know, occupied temple. You know, we got the occupied territories, the UN is going to call it an occupied temple, that we had built it with the wealth of the nation. Because these were gold and gems and silver and copper that had been conquered. Shlomo was a man of peace, felt, you know what, we'll find another use for that, but the Beis HaMikdash, let's not use that from the money that was won in conquest.
But the original was won in conquest in a way when they left Egypt.
The Mishkan, the tabernacle, that's interesting. It was a little different. We didn't fight them. It's not like we fought them and won the battle, and then they drowned in the sea, and then the gems came up, or that we borrowed them. But it wasn't like a bloody war.
No. Well, didn't they go and ask them for the?
They asked them for the gold. Yeah. Right. So it was a little different. But I hear the. But what's interesting here is that we don't have a definitive answer. We can guess. So it's not a right or wrong. It's just this is a little more open to what why he didn't want to use it, but. We start with that he brought, he took his father's stuff and he didn't want to use that. Verse 1. Az Yikal Shlomo as Zikne Yisrael. Now, he didn't, it's also interesting, he didn't celebrate the inauguration right then and there. He pushed it off for the holidays that were coming up. And we'll see why in a second. And there is a concept like that. That in other words, sometimes you want to celebrate something that you don't have to celebrate it when the last hammer, you know, the last nail. You celebrate it when you're best able to prepare and get ready to celebrate it in the right way. So we're going to see. So Oz Yikal Shlomo Hazikne. So Shlomo decided that he would gather the elders of Israel. These were the sages, as Kol Roshi Hamatos and also the heads of the tribes. Nesia Avos Lifnei Yisrael. So this was going to be a big powwow, and he invited all of the important people, all the elders, all the heads of the tribes, El Melech Shlomo, and this was in his capacity of the king, and they came to Yerushalayim. La'alos it's Aaron. Now, it's interesting also, there was more than one Aaron. Many people aren't aware of this. They had a traveling Aaron also that was went with them in war. And sometimes the Aaron represented different things. Here it's called Aron Bris, the Ark of the Covenant. Sometimes it's the plain Ark, and some because this represented a covenant. A covenant is like a deal, like the now that we were settled in our land and we were building a place for Hashem's permanence. This was like making a deal. It was like making a covenant with Hashem. So it's called the Aron Bris Hashem, and he brings it from Ir David Hisiyon. Now, this is another interesting thing. A lot of people know, where does the word Zion come from? What is Zion? What is Zionism? Well, Zionism is a word that was made up from the word Zion. But what is Zion?
Don't you consider that Israel?
Well, what does it look like here? He says, Meir David. Some people say it means Jerusalem. It's another name for Jerusalem. Some people say there was a little city next to Yerushalayim called Zion that was... typically in Hebrew, the word Sion means like a sign or a marker. And the word Sion is that we should be something that stands out, something that is something that people see as a guide. In other words, we're meant to be a guide for the world. We're the older brother. When Moshe came to Paro, he said, "Bini b'chori." I'm the in Egypt they had a concept that the oldest child in each household was the leader and would go and would bring the offerings in the temple, and that's why the b'chor, the firstborn, was very important in each household. And Moshe says to Paro that the Jewish people is the older brother. We're in charge. We're meant to show the world to be the leader, the oldest, to lead the way. So the word Zion really means like to lead the way, and we're meant to be and it's funny, the world holds us to a different standard than everybody else. They expect us to be the role model. They expect us to be better. We find that they're nasty about it, you know, when we don't, you know, we can't be the same as anybody else, but they want us to be better. But the word Zion actually means like a sign or something that you look up to, like a marker. But it could be another name for Yerushalayim, or it could be the, so again it says, Meir David, the city of David, which is Sion, which is another name for Yerushalayim. But, or it could be, it means the whole of Israel, like you said as well. V'yikalu el melech Shlomo kol ish Yisrael. Now, who got the invitation? Just the elders. Who came? Everybody came. Right? Isn't that interesting? Like the, it says, who, and the first verse says, Shlomo gathered together all the leaders and the heads of the tribes. And then, it says, who came? So the first verse was who got invited. Az yikahal Shlomo as signature. Shlomo gathered all the elders. And then this verse is everybody came. So he knew how to get everybody there, because if all the important people were going to be there, then you're going to be there, right? If all the, you know, if everybody who's important comes, it's just interesting how that happened, or the dynamics of it, because some people say this as a praise of the Jewish people, that we don't want to miss this. You know, look, you know, all the leaders, all the elders are going to be there, with us, by the way, we, part of our respect for age is that when we talk about somebody who's wise or a sage or a leader, we call them a zaken, a leader, you know, old. In the United States, when you're old, it's like you're over the hill. Like, that's a word for, like, we want the new model, like a cell phone that's like last year's model, forget it, it's old. You know? But with us, the older the better, you know, and so the way we describe our leaders are the ziknei, the elders of the people. But if they were there, everybody else was going to come. If the elders are going to be there and the leaders, so they all came. They all, Kol Ish Yisrael, every man of Israel came. Now, the day they chose to celebrate the month was B'Yerech Esanim. It was in the holiday, in the month of the, he calls it the Mighty Ones. This is the month of Tishrei. That's where all the Jewish holidays are, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. And it's when the Avos were born. That's our, in terms of the months that we are, that we have like the most celebration going on, the most connection, that's the month of where we begin with Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. It's a mighty month. It's like it's an ideal time to like celebrate our connection to Hashem. And so that's when he, that's when Bechag Hu Chodesh Hashvi'i, it was in the seventh month. Verse 3, V'yavo kol ziknei Yisrael v'yisro kohanim es ha'aron, and the kohanim carry the ark. So a lot of surprises over here, a lot of questions. Whose job was it to carry the Aron?
The
Levi. The Levi'im, right. In the desert, there was a special family of Levites that carried it. The Kahasim, I think. Kahas or something. The Levi'im were the... And now, over here, all of a sudden, the Kohanim were carrying the Aron. So some people say this represented like a new era. Like, you know, the Levi'im were good in the desert, but now the Kohanim were also Levi'im. But it's just interesting that the Kohanim are carrying the ark over here. But some people say it's not a contradiction. It's just interesting that the, you know, all throughout the desert the Levi'im carried. Over here, yeah, the Kohanim carry it. Now, they want to dedicate the Beis Hamikdash. The central point of the Beis Hamikdash was the ark with the Ten Commandments inside. So therefore, the most important thing would be to bring the, you had a structure, but to bring the ark, the Aron, into the Beis Hamikdash, that would be the beginning of the dedication. So that was the ceremony over here. Today, we have this ceremony when we dedicate a Torah. Very similar to, it's really an ancient ceremony of escorting the Torah, you know, to its rest, you know, to bring it to the shul. That's what they do with that. I'm trying to remember when the last time we had, wasn't that, Torah Day School had one, I think, at the beginning of the year, or the shul had one a few years ago. When you bring a Torah scroll to its place, that's like a great joy, and that's similar to what happened over here. V'yalu es Aron Hashem, es Ohel Moed, es Kol, they brought the tent of the meeting, es Kol Klei HaKodesh, es Shirbo, they disassembled it, and they brought it all up. Bialo Osama Kohanim Velevim, and they brought it there. Now the actual Mishkan, I think at this point, the one that Moshe had built was put away somewhere. They had underground storage caves. In fact, there's a tradition that Shlomo knew that the Beis Hamikdash would be destroyed, and therefore he built in an underground chamber to keep the Aron. And that's why today Israel would love to, they keep on digging underneath because they're hoping to find it, because they know it's got to be somewhere, you know, if they, you know, they could dig. And there's, historically, there was a time where there was a cave that was found, and somebody came across some of the vessels, and he was told not to tell anyone because they were under Arab rule or Turkish rule, and they were afraid if they, you know, you find all the gold and silver, you never know. They told the Chafetz Chaim, that's the way the story went. They sent a message, what should we do? You know, like, maybe it'd be a good thing to find all of the, they believe it's down there somewhere. It's been hidden for many, there was one of the Kohanim once noticed that one of the floor tiles was loose at a certain spot. You have to know how to look for these. If you're in a building, you'll notice, like, you can tell where they built over, where they did. So he once noticed at a certain place, he noticed that he thought he understood exactly. And he told everyone, let me show you. And then he dropped dead before he revealed exactly what he had. Apparently it wasn't meant to be disclosed. But it's just interesting that there is somewhere. But included in that would have been the... but I don't know if that's still around, the skins. They had special hides that they made, the beautiful tapestries from the tabernacle. But that was all brought up to this place.
He was probably so excited until...
That could be too, yeah, that's right. That's
anyone would have.
That's interesting. That could explain why he did too.
Yeah.
Okay. Verse 8. Ba'melech Shlomo v'kol adas Yisrael, no'di me'lov ito and Shlomo and all the people who were with him. This is probably his cabinet. One of the things we see about Shlomo is that he had advisors. This was all the kings had advisors. They never did it alone. They always had, this is our way, the Jewish way, which is that, you know, we need to have advisors. We need to, ideas are done together. Lifnei Aaron Mizav Kimtzon Ubakar, and they were bringing offerings. The offerings that they brought, you couldn't count. There was just so much being done. Verse 6. V'yavo Kohanim Es Aaron Bris Hashem Makomo. They brought it to the place. Now, normally, no one's allowed to really see the place. Many people feel they, like, opened it up for the inaugural. Like, you could actually, yeah, they brought it in to the Holy of Holies, Eldvir Abayis, HaKadosh HaGachim, and they brought it underneath the cherubs. So, the Kruvim, that's... it's a mystical subject, the cherubs. On a very simple level, the cherubs had faces like little children. And we are big believers, again, before I was telling you how we believe in the elders, our other belief is taking care of the children. If you ever know that, and that is they're our future. The children are very holy because they haven't sinned yet, and they have that spark of their soul, and they're created in the image of Hashem. And we invest our future in our children. Children to us are very important. And so the holiest spot, the Aaron, had two little children there. Had the faces of two little angels that were cherubs that are, and to us that's the importance. The central place in our life is for our children. In previous times, you know, we all knew our grandparents what they wouldn't do for their children. You know, their whole life there was like nothing. They almost didn't take care of themselves. They just, I mean, I knew my, you know, grandparents and great grand. It was all for the children. Like. I wish I would be like that, you know, but we're a little more selfish, I think. But we knew people like that they would just, they'd sacrifice everything. It was just about their children.
They made moves without knowing the language, without mm-hmm. having a job, because they wanted it better for the children, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just, but where did they get that? Because that was the, you know, Judaism says that, you know, that's the cherubs in the holiest spot. You have the children. That's the, to us, that's important. That's an important thing. Okay, Kruvim. Now they had Proshen Kanaf El Makam Aaron. They covered the ark. They had these wings and they covered the ark. V'yisava Kruvim Al Aaron Valbada Milmala, and they faced upward. Like it means that also in life you have to go up. Verse 8. V'yarku Abadim V'yurosh Abadim. Is interesting. The ark had poles attached to it. Staves, poles, I don't know what you call it. And the poles were still there. There's some people say that's the idea that the Torah is not found in one place. It travels. It's a traveling Torah. Wherever you go, you're going to have the ark is going to go. It's an interesting thing that they used to ask the people that carry the ark, was it heavy? And they said that it was a miracle that the ark actually carried them. It was, in other words, instead of them having to pick up and schlep the ark, all the carriers would say they would hold on, and it was like battery pack, you know, it just went like on auto, you know, and it's symbolic that we think that we carry the Torah carries us. That's the symbolism there. But that was the historical factor, the people that, but it had these big, heavy, you know, long poles. And the way it was, there was a curtain in front, and the poles, you couldn't see into the Holy of Holies, but you saw those two where the poles just pushed against the curtain. And that's what it's describing over here, these poles. The Yarv verse 8, the poles stuck out towards the Loyura Chutza Vehoshama, and they were still there until that was the time this book was written. Ein Ba'aron. Now, what do they have in the Aron? What belongs in the Aron? What's the holiest thing? So, Rak Shnei Luchos Avanim. All they had in the Aron were the two tablets. Judaism. We're all about the Torah. The Torah is our central thing. We don't have anything else. Those two tablets. Asher Hanach Sham Moshe B'Chorev. And these were the same tablets that Moshe Rabbeinu brought from Mount Sinai. Chorev is another name for Sinai. That was the Sinai Desert. Asher Koresh Hashem. And the Torah itself was part of our covenant with Hashem. B'Tzeisim Eretz Mitzrayim. The Ten Commandments are extremely important. There were sects of people that overemphasized the Ten Commandments to the point where they only kept the Ten. And therefore, they de-emphasized the Ten Commandments because people were getting the wrong impression. Meaning they used to actually, some people would say them every day as part of davening, and they would stand up whenever they were read. And there's no question that these Ten were very important. When you think about it, a lot of the Gentiles will follow the Ten or say they follow the Ten. I don't believe, it's just more symbolic, but it's because some of the sects that started at six, we keep a lot of mitzvahs, and it's not easy. It's not easy having six. Whenever you turn around, there's another mitzvah to do, right? So some people like, instead of 613, let's only keep 10. Well, which 10? All right, don't kill. That's not so hard. That's the last time you killed someone, right? So a lot of people, they like the idea of just doing 10. So it became, because there were sects of people that over, again, the early Christians were some of those sects that did overemphasize the 10. So, and that's, again, that's why today you find in a lot of these, I think in Atlanta, didn't they have the 10 commandments? Or was that in the different cities where they had these, in the legal places where they had...
In the courtyards.
It's not wrong, but where it comes from, where there were people that only saw the 10 without seeing the whole Torah. But the 10 were very, very important. But because certain people thought of it as only 10, and I've had even people tell me that, they think of when you think of the Bible, they say, oh, the Ten Commandments, like, hey, that's because that was the name of the movie, right? But it's not, why do they call it the Ten Commandments? Because to them, that's what it is. They don't realize that there's, if you go outside our circles, no one knows about 613. What about, actually, it's not even 10 commandments. There's more than 10 commandments in there. Did you know that? It's not, there's 10 sayings, it's actually more, there are 10 sayings, but some of the commandments are multiple, this is very important and very central to our lives. It's just, we don't know the value of mitzvahs, and so we don't say that one mitzvah is more important than the other. So we don't say, well, I keep the 10 and I don't keep this, right? We try to do them all. So, but they kept it there, and this is the one that when we left Egypt. Verse 10, V'hi betzeisa kohanim in a kodesh v'ana moles beis Hashem. And when the kohanim put the ark down, so like a cloud descended. And we find reference to it like a cloud. That's like there's an idea with Hashem. We can't see Hashem, so there's like surrounded by a cloud. They couldn't stand there because the cloud was there. I don't know what that means exactly, like that the house was filled with a cloud. You could stand in a cloud. But there was some kind of presence of Hashem that was felt, that Hashem was descending down, and it just was so powerful that they couldn't stand there. We find by the sukkahs that there's an opinion that the sukkahs represented the clouds of glory. There's an idea like Hashem is sometimes found in a cloud, but it's not our kind of cloud. It's more of like a hovering presence that's felt. Verse 12, that Hashem should dwell. Now these are some mystical words describing, until now we felt that Hashem is everywhere, and we wanted to create a nation where he would dwell in our midst. And the place that he would dwell would be in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, in order for that to happen, Hashem would, so to speak, descend from the heavens and come down to the earth. That was our job, was to, the earth is a very distant place from the heavens, but our goal was to turn the earth into a place where Hashem could dwell. So he describes here where Shlomo is kind of telling Hashem to come down from the higher worlds into the lower worlds. That's in verse 13. That's why it doesn't translate. A dwelling place. Boni benisi beiz zvu lach melchon l'shivtecha olamim. I built you like another place to live, Hashem. Like the, our job is to make this world, which is a world of light and darkness, a place where the light of Hashem can dwell. Verse 14. Yaseh melech espanav, and the king turned his face, ve'yivorech eskol ha'kalyus, and he blessed the Jewish people. So isn't that interesting that when you want to do something holy, you bless the people? That's what it's all about. It's like our concept of what Hashem, the concluding ceremony was always the Birkas Kohanim, was blessing the people, was always people sometimes get mixed up and they think being pious is only about you and God, but what Hashem wants you to do is to be somebody that loves people and wants the best for people and enriches people. And so that's what he does over here, as he turns to the people. The Kol HaKal Yisrael, Omer, everybody was standing there. As we turn to 1165, Yomar Baruch Hashem, he says, blessed is Hashem, Elokei Yisrael, Asher Dibur Befiv Ves David Aviv, that he told my father David, Yonah Molalema, and he said to him, Mera Yom Asher, from the day where I took Es Ami, my people, Es Yisrael, who's my people? The Jewish people. Mimitzrayim, I took them out of Egypt. Lo b'charti v'ir mikol shifti Yisrael. Now, until now, there had not been a special place. We had temporary places. Shiloh was the name of one of them, the places that there's the Mishkan Shiloh and a few other places. Mikol shifti livnos bayis liyos l'shmi. Until now, these hundreds of years had gone by, I did not choose any special city. The Efgra b'David, and I've chosen David, liyos alam Yisrael. I've chosen David to be on top of my people. Verse 17, Vihi im leva of David avi, and it was with your father, the heart of my father David, livnos bayis l'shem Hashem. He had the idea, that was his idea, was to build a place for Hashem. Verse 18, V'yomar Hashem o David avi, and he told my father David. Now, by the way, this kind of mitigates where we started. Don't think that he was trying to insult his father by not using his gold and his. This was part of his speech. This was all about his father David. Yana shirhayim leva limnas bay lishmi hetivosi kihayim. If that's what you want to do, Hashem said, I will help you. But Hashem told him, verse 19, Rachata lo tivne habayis, that David won't build the house, ki im bincha yotim el chatzecha, but your very own child will be the one to do it, hu yivne habayis l'shmi, he will build it. Now there's a medrash like this, and it should give us, sometimes we think, we don't understand why we can't always be popular. In other words, like, why is it that sometimes people get upset at us in life? Like, you know, we mean well. Like, I had one of my shuls like that when I was young, and I could not imagine. I just wanted to teach Torah. I just wanted to be nice to people. I just thought that maybe when shuls don't get along with their rabbi, that's the rabbi's fault. It's another place. It's like, I could not imagine that there were just people that are sometimes like to fight and like to argue and like to give someone a hard time. And but it exists, you know, and it's part of life. If you're going to do things, there are going to be some people who don't like what you're doing. That's the way it is. And David, his whole life, there were people who fought against him, who he had detractors. That was part of his struggle. The day he was born, people said he was illegitimate. If you remember when the prophet came to anoint the sons of Yishai, he wasn't even there. They said, you can't mean David. You got to mean the other ones. These are all your sons. He said, are you sure these are all your sons? You don't mean him. Because David, are you kidding? His whole life he was rejected. In fact, in the Tehillim, he says that that Hashem takes the stone that was rejected. That's the main stone that Hashem chose him. But his whole life he was rejected. People called him a sinner. His own children rebelled against him. So, and this lingered. There were still detractors who said, you know, maybe David, there's a tradition that when they came to the Beis HaMikdash to go in, there were big gates, big giant gates that were led to the Beis HaMikdash, and they couldn't get them open. And they pulled and they tugged and they couldn't, and they didn't know what to do. Because here they had the entire Jewish people were standing there with, just imagine if, you know, they're standing there with the Torah and the ark doors wouldn't open. They just wouldn't open. And so Shlomo is like, they call the king, he comes and he prays, nothing happens. So then he adds another prayer, and they're like, you know, everybody's like, you know, so imagine 100,000 people waiting with the Torahs, with the, you know, open. So finally, someone put in Shlomo's mind to say the prayer that says, "Remember my father David." He said, "The Levim sing the David song," and they sung the David song, "Zikro David," and "Remember my servant David." Pop, the gates opened, and they brought the Aron in, and they said at that time. Finally, the people stopped grumbling about David HaMelech. That was like the sign. David had asked his whole life, like, Hashem, when is this going to stop? When are people going to finally give me the benefit of the doubt that I'm their king, I love them, I want what's best for them? Why are they giving me such a hard time? Hashem said, I can't give you the sign in your lifetime. After you, and this was the sign. When they built the Beis HaMikdash, that was with the doors opened, and when the Levim sang, they remember my servant David. But unfortunately, this world, it's not always meant to be easy. For whatever reason, you can't always be popular and do the right thing, you can ask for it, you can hope for it, but there will always be detractors. But David had his detractors, and so that's part of his speech here, where he says, "Remember my father David and how he served Hashem." And this was finally vindication that, you know, that he really had his heart in the right place, and everything he did was for the right reasons. Verse 20. So he says the following, "V'yakam Hashem es dvar asher diber," and Hashem kept his word, which he said, "V'acham tachas David avi," and I've succeeded my father David, "V'eshev al kisei Yisrael," and I sat on the throne of Israel, just like Hashem said, "V'evn habayis l'shem Hashem elokei Yisrael," and I'm building the house, and this house is for the sake of Hashem, the God of Israel, "V'eshev shem makam ul aron," and I built a place in his house for the Torah, "Asher shem bris Hashem," and that represents our covenant. Our covenant with Hashem is the Torah, "Asher karasi mavusenu," and this covenant he did with our forefathers, "Botzer samer etz Mitzrayim," when he took us out of Egypt. And so this is the completion of the Mishkan process that's mentioned in our parsha, which was the settling of the Beis HaMikdash. That's why we're hopeful when the Mashiach comes that we'll again have the third house come, where we'll have the Ark and the covenant that represents the Hashem coming down to our world.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.